Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're feeling a little radio shy, you can feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. First, I want to welcome everybody to our very first Monday evening show for Straight Wives Talk Show. After 4.5 years, we've moved the night from Sunday nights to Monday nights. And that's because I think people are busy on Sunday nights. They're getting ready for work on Monday. And I know that at the end of a weekend, I want to have at least a little time to prepare for the rest of my week. So this will make it easier, and it's an earlier time so that people don't have to stay up quite so late. So hopefully, if you can't listen to us live, you know you can always hit into the link and listen to us later. We're going to carry on with the same wonderful quality of programming, and we're going to have my ongoing co-host and co-hostess, Dr. Brian Hooper, who's joining me this evening, and Suzette Vernon, who will be joining us in the future on the first Mondays of the month. Also, next week, I just wanted to mention, I have my very dear, wonderful friend, Mary Ann Glynn, who will be returning to our show. Mary Ann is an expert on post-traumatic stress disorder, and we're going to be talking a lot about that and how it affects children and families also when they're growing up in these marriages, how these have long-term effects as far as their mental health is concerned, because there's more and more reports coming out about this. So tune in next Monday night to hear Mary Ann. Also, I just wanted to mention that we will be having our Healing Weekend coming up at the end of September here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I'll be sending out details on that later in March or the beginning of April. But if you're looking to spend a really wonderful weekend, and we're going to have some really special guests coming and doing seminars for this particular weekend, it's going to be so exciting. You know, just like I say, try to treat yourself to a weekend of healing, because once you leave one of these weekends, you'll never feel the same again. I wanted to introduce Dr. Hooper, who's joining us. Brian, thank you so much for being here with me tonight.
My pleasure to be with you, Bonnie, and all the wonderful ladies that are listening this evening, and some gentlemen, too.
I know that our women are always so excited when you're coming on the show, because you really do have such a really healing effect on so many of them, and I always get such beautiful feedback that they can't wait till you're going to be on the show. So
well,
that's why I'm always excited when it's your night.
Thank you for that feedback from me, too. I appreciate that. We all need a pat on the back once in a while, and I'm grateful. Thank you.
Well, Brian, you've been working more and more than you used to with straight wives and gay husbands, right, in the last year or two?
I certainly have been. Oh, my gosh. I guess the word is getting out, or something's in the water. I'm not sure, but I really am. Yes.
And I know that you're dealing with a lot of the emotional impacts that I'm dealing with when people come to you. And I wanted tonight to talk a little bit about some of the emotional issues that women really struggle with, because from your insight as a therapist and from a gay man, you know, you have a different perspective that maybe will help some of our women understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Brian a little bit earlier, and I told him one of the issues that I really wanted to discuss are the struggles that women have with ending these marriages. And it could be for a variety of reasons, and I'll tell you what primarily some of these reasons that keep popping up. One is because the woman says that she truly loves her husband because he's truly a good man, and, you know, the only thing is he's gay, but he promises he's not going to act on it because he loves her so much that that's not going to happen. So she feels obliged to not do anything about it because she loves him. And other than that little issue, you know, that she can live with that and turn her eyes as long as he's not doing it. So that's one reason. Then another reason is because some women are saying, well, I don't want to have to break up a family. I have children. They need the security of two parents. And we can just fake it until they're older and they don't have to know anything. So that's another reason. And the third reason is because of fear. Of, I don't think I can make it on my own. You know, this is how I've been living. A lot of these women are already mentally beaten down from years of living in a marriage that's really, you know, deteriorating to them mentally. So they just feel that, you know, they can't do it because they don't have the strength to do it. So I'd like to talk to you about some of those issues. When you hear stories like this, what are your thoughts?
Yes, thank you. Also, I'm just going to add, and I'm not going to go into it right now, but there is the husband side of all three of those as well. But let's focus first on the ladies. There's the I love him, and he promises never to do anything with another man again. So I'll just put this to one side and, you know, make the best of it. Just enjoy what we call companionate love, no longer romantic love, erotic love. Just kind of like having a roommate, but oftentimes the one that was the father of your kids. Of course, you know, you and I have spoken about the fact that we never tell other people what to do. We may give them our perspective on the consequences. We don't tell them what to do. My concern is that doing this prevents the woman from being the fullest version of herself that she can be. It keeps her from having what she got married for in the first place, was not simply to have a roommate and to be somebody to be the father, perhaps, of children, but she really wanted a life partner when she got married. She wanted somebody to hold and to be held by, somebody that she could dream dreams with. And when this sort of thing comes out, that ends. There may be kindness there, but there's not really what she got into marriage for in the first place. And she's also aiding and abetting him in continuing to live a self-deception too. And I have to ask myself, is that really the most loving thing to do for either one of them? I don't think it is. I think people can love each other, continue to love each other. I've witnessed this with couples where he comes out or he gets found out and they deal with it and they divorce and they move on, and yet they can remain friends. In fact, sometimes better friends because it's honest now. So I'm going to stop there with the first example, and Bonnie, I'd like to invite you to chime in and share your thoughts.
Yeah, I'd like to mention a few things and just get your input on this. I think you're totally on target with this, but here are some of the responses they give me with this. First of all, some of these women have had sex with their husbands for a number of years. It may not have been frequent or often or the best sex, but they did have sex, which really kind of misled them into thinking that there was not a problem there. Because a lot of our women really weren't that sexually experienced to start with. So they didn't know what a norm was, or they would think that maybe things are a little off, but they're still having sex. So, you know, and then when they approach their husbands on it later and their husbands say to them, listen, how many couples do you know that keep having sex? You know, sex is great when you're younger and, you know, you're all excited, but marriage is based on a lot more than sex. And the women start buying into this theory because, you know, their husbands are very convincing about this. So how do you respond to that? What do you tell women when they say that to you?
Well, you know, I
would
say...
All couples have sex lives that slow down.
Yeah, well, a lot of couples do have sex lives that slow down. But that's not because it's biologically determined that it has to be that way. It's often the case that people fall into certain patterns, and, you know, this is probably not going to be a whole lot of value to the people who are listening right now if they're staying in a mixed marriage, gay, straight, but if they get into a straight marriage, they might want to pick up Esther Perel's book, Mating in Captivity, where she talks about, she's a clinical psychologist, she works with couples in sex therapy, and she's really quite brilliant, and she talks about how it is that couples can, within the bounds of marriage, keep the sex life really going, you know, really into old age. They don't have to give it up. But couples often fall into that because they fall into routines. And in some cases, the component that kept it exciting is lost once they have children, but it doesn't have to be that way. And there are many couples who work hard and they keep their sex life active and vibrant. So I would say it may be too often the case, but it doesn't mean it's what really ought to be the norm.
Okay. And I also say that even though people when they're younger in these straight gay marriages have sex, it's not necessarily the kind of sex that women are looking for. In other words,
no,
it lacks
not.
The foreplay, it lacks the passion. You know,
right.
Just because a man can get excited sexually doesn't mean it's passion. Would you agree with that?
Completely. And I've had many clients who have been married have said to me, I didn't really realize what sex was until I started getting together with the person I was, you know, the sex I was really attracted to. And all of a sudden, they feel alive. And a woman deserves to have, a straight woman deserves to have a man who feels more alive with her than without her, because that just telegraphs all sorts of important information for sexual satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think that with straight couples, I think unless you've really been in a straight situation for a straight person and, of course, a gay situation for a gay person, that the intimacy doesn't build in the same direction, because I think that intimacy develops from lustful, you know, sexual activity. You know, it's a way of expressing your love for a person and your desire for a person. And that unless you have that, that it's hard to really develop intimacy for the times that aren't good. You know, if somebody's sick or somebody's going through some problems, you know, you can't be, you know, don't expect people to have sex all the time when they want it. You know, there could be circumstances that prevent it, but at least you go back to it.
Right, exactly, exactly. Yep.
So I think that these marriages also miss the intimacy. And I think a lot of women don't understand that because they haven't been in many relationships before. So, you know, this is your first relationship or first, you know, an important relationship or sexual relationship. Because many of the women who are a part of our network are Christian women. And they really took it seriously. You know, they really waited until after they got married. And because that was their belief system. And now it's almost as if they're being penalized because they didn't have any experience to know the difference.
Right. And they did, you know, they did what the church has counseled them to do. And I honor that. But they need to know that.
Although I'm not sure how the church counsels that, Brian. Maybe you could shed a little more insight because I have a friend...
What I'm seeing is, in many cases, the church has counseled people to remain abstinent until they're married. Yeah, until
right. But does that mean, like, I have a friend who's, you know, a good Christian. I mean, she really is. She's a wonderful woman. She has a wonderful husband. They have a wonderful life together. And they didn't have the actual sexual act prior to the time of marriage, but they sure messed around a lot up until that point.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Other stuff. Is that okay with the church, you think?
Well, I think it depends on which church body and which pastors we're talking about. You know, in my own church body, we ask people to be circumspect about how they treat their own bodies and each other's bodies and to act with reverence for humanity. But, you know, we're not interested in doing bed checks and telling people exactly what they can and cannot do. We're providing the basic ethical guidelines. They have to make their own decisions.
I guess the point I'm making is that I think that with a straight man, he would be all over the woman, even if he couldn't actually, you know, go to the bottom line.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Where a gay man would be relieved that he doesn't have to be all over her body. You know, to me, that seems to happen, that most of the women I have who come from the church background said there was no kind of fooling around. And their husbands kept saying, well, we'll wait until we're married, or, you know, this isn't right to do in front of God. And, you know, they just bought into that because they met him in church.
And even within the marriage, they may have a hyper sense of modesty, and that provides a very convenient reason not to be very sexually active.
Or just for procreating, or... Well,
yeah,
I think that's pretty extreme. I mean, I think some Christian groups believe that, but I think they're cults, right? I don't think regular Christianity necessarily would say that, would you? Anymore today?
Well, I still know that my understanding, I'm not a Roman Catholic priest, but my understanding is that, you know, one is allowed to have pleasure, but it needs to be about procreation.
Okay, well, that's good, but at least they can have the pleasure while they're doing the procreating, right?
Yeah, right.
At least you're saying have some pleasure while you're procreating.
Definitely.
So, I mean, I could go for that. But so you can mess around before you get to that bottom line, before you're married, and that would certainly be a telltale sign to me. But once you don't mess around there, so you don't know what the norm is because you're thinking this is what's expected, then I think that a lot of women don't really understand what this is about. They get very strongly misled into these marriages, thinking, well, this is what it's supposed to be, and feeling disappointed.
And there can be, among some religious folks, an alienation from the body anyway, so that there's sort of this inherent shame that they have grown up with about their bodies and about wanting to have pleasure and about eros and about just sort of opening up the gates and letting the passion happen. You know, there are plenty of people who, because they have been raised in a very sexually restricted environment where people don't talk about bodies and body parts and functions, that they go into their marriages feeling, you know, uncomfortable about human sexuality. So they're, again, they may get by on very little and not realize what it is they're missing out on.
I think it's really sad because I think of women who spend their whole lives married to gay men who don't have the courage to come out. And I don't necessarily feel that, you know, these very strict religious-oriented men are necessarily going out there and doing much of anything, but they're not happy being in a marriage with a straight woman because they can't integrate themselves into who they are. So they lead a frustrated life, and they take it out on their families. They don't have a quality of life, and they rob the wife from having a quality of life.
Well, and also my observation is there are plenty of men from very conservative religious groups who are out there getting it on the down low and are extremely conflicted about it. So just because they're part of a very conservative group doesn't mean that they're just, you know.
I know a lot of them do, but I know some men who just feel so, you know, that they would want to, but they're just too embarrassed, too ashamed. But that doesn't stop the desire from being there.
Right, and the frustration and the resentment.
Exactly.
Of what they got themselves into, the thing gets telegraphed in their relationship with their spouse without even saying anything.
Well, that's the whole thing. And a lot of times, you know, it's a whole lifetime of misery based on the perception that the woman has no idea about why it's like this. That's what I say.
So here's a good question. Here's a good question for the women to ask themselves. If, and this would go for those in that third category of financially, you know, insecure. If money were no object, and societal judgments around them could just be banned for the moment, and they could wake up with the life they wanted tomorrow, what would that life look like? Honestly, what would that life look like, and how is that life different from the life they're in? And I would encourage the ladies who are in any of these positions to ask themselves that question and allow themselves to utilize their imaginations as to what is the relationship with a husband that they would really like to have. And then ask, what's the difference between that and what I've got? And I think they'll see there's a big gap.
Right, there is. But I think in some cases they stop believing that they're capable of ever finding it. I think they believe they've been told by their husbands, you're unattractive, you're undesirable. You know, they're getting all those subtle messages on a daily basis.
Sure.
So that, you know, that changes their whole outlook on how they feel about themselves. And when you don't have any self-esteem, you're not going to look for making any changes in your life because you don't think you deserve it.
Right. I would really encourage them to get into some sort of really healthy women's support group. Yeah, and if they can afford to get into individual psychotherapy, to go do it, and preferably that they would do that with another woman who can help them build their self-esteem. I recently wrote an article, I guess it's been a year or so now, but it was entitled Self-Esteem is Handcrafted, and the point I make is that self-esteem is the relationship, the reputation that we build with ourselves. Nobody can give it to us. And if that's the case, nobody can really take it away from us. Like my parents gave me the space to build that reputation with myself, but they couldn't build it for me. I realize many women are living in a situation where the husband isn't giving them the space to build it with themselves, but what I would say is then go find people who can love you, who can give you that space. Go find sisters that you can bond with that will say, we believe in you, let's make plans together for you, what are your goals? How can we support you in that? Begin to feel good about yourself because you're accomplishing something for yourself. And to the point that they're then ready to go ahead and make the big step. That's what I'm saying. Self-esteem is the reputation we build with ourselves, and it's handcrafted, and then we got to go and do it. And these men who are blaming the women, that's not all gay men who are married. We know that. But there are some who really try to make it all the woman's problem. They're not providing the environment, so go find that environment in a support group.
I know it sounds in theory good. I just think in practicality it's difficult. A lot of these men are very controlling and don't let you have those kind of affiliations. They don't want your ego and your, you know, self-esteem to be built up because that will be in conflict of what they're trying to do to keep you down. And this is also a common bond with many of our women, starting with me. I'm the first to admit it, that my ex-husband was very strong in isolating me from other people and from my family. And that often happens because they want to control the environment since they can't control themselves. And they're so afraid that people are going to find out about their secret that they literally, you know, create fights with your family, create fights with your friends around you. And I know in my own life, it got to the point where my family just said to me, look, we love you, but we're not coming to your house anymore. You know, whenever we come to your house, he has to start a fight and an argument. We're in the middle of this. We're coming to visit because we, you know, want to see you both. But he makes it so impossible. And this is a common strategy that some of these men are using. So you feel like you can't go. Like when I have women who write to me, like I had two of them today who sent me letters saying they need information, but they said, can you please send it to me somewhere else because I'm too afraid that my husband's going to find out and he'll blow a gasket. You know, when you're under that kind of tight control.
Yeah. So that's one of the, you know, that's one of the signs of being with an abusive man, even if he hasn't laid a hand on you. It's the threat of abuse in and of itself is abuse. And
exactly.
There, I don't know about all of the YMCAs or YWCAs, but I know the one here actually has counseling for women and a safe house that only they know where it is. I don't even know where it is. I couldn't know where it is. They wouldn't tell me, and I'm a licensed therapist, and I would never ask. But what I'm saying is that, you know, they can research places for abused and battered women, and I wanted to make the point that if a man is controlling, where are you, what have you done, account for every cent you paid, et cetera, that is abuse, and it's terrifying to me just to think about it. I would encourage them to, you know, quietly reach out and try to get their plan in place. And they have to have their plan first before they can leave.
These women feel really guilty, Brian, because they're emotionally abused, not physically abused. And they feel that, you know, when you've been beaten down emotionally on a day-in, day-out case, that people won't believe you. You know, you don't look like you've been beaten up. You don't have any, you know, bruises. Have you reported this before? Maybe you're just complaining too much. You know, it's everything you're saying really sounds, you know, like the right steps to take. But for some women, the thought of having to go to an abuse shelter and they'll say, I'm going to break up my family and take my kids to an abuse shelter. And, you know, are we really being abused or am I overreacting? You know, I agree with you. I think emotional abuse is much deeper than physical abuse because physical abuse, you know, can end sooner than emotional abuse.
Well, typically the control of not just the put-downs, but the control of time and money hand in hand with physical abuse. If a husband is controlling their every movement and their every penny, the punch, the slap, or the kick is not very far away. I'm just offering that warning.
Right. Although the majority of the women in our group don't have the physical abuse. I think that the control is for a different reason than normal men who are abnormal men. Dysfunctional men.
Yeah, I think the men are feeling out of control, so they control what seems to be within their control.
Exactly. I think that for gay men, it's different. I think for them, they're not usually, in all the years I've been doing this, very few instances of physical abuse are involved with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if there were physical abuse involved, then, we have Misty, who used to be, my co-host, she was a therapist, and she was physically abused. But the majority of our women, I would say maybe less than 10% ever get the physical abuse side of it. It's always emotional and control.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I'm not saying it can happen, but I think it's more because they're just afraid of their sexuality being found out as opposed to being a controlling person.
Right. Yeah.
So, okay, that was our first
women,
example.
I just want the women to take a look at and realize, even if it's, I don't want to say just because that minimizes it, it's not just emotional abuse, but if it's there and they want to get out and they're afraid because they're being emotionally, intimidated, they still need to make a plan, have an exit strategy in place,
uh-huh.
and have support, because the guy will try to talk them out of it.
Yeah, they really have to get support, and that's why I always tell women, if you can't find support in your own family, come to my family.
Right.
I have a lot of support.
In fact, right. For those who don't know, mention your online support group, huh?
Well, we have other kinds of support right now. We're not doing the online support group. We're doing other means of one-on-one kinds of pain pals.
They can contact you. Yeah, they can
contact me. We'll tell you how we can get support for you. But, another thing is that one of our women just mentioned yesterday in our support group that we have that she was upset because, when she tells people this, they say, oh, well, why can't you just get over it? Okay, you went through this big deal. And they don't understand. And that's okay. I told her, don't keep doing this because people don't understand. This is a unique set of circumstances that unless you're living it, you don't really get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same in any kind of other situation where you need help. For instance, I can feel very compassionate towards women who have breast cancer, and I'm more than happy to help support the cause of raising money for, research and whatever has to be done. And my heart goes out to any woman who's going through this, but I can't feel what they're feeling because I'm not living it.
No.
Right?
Right.
So I think you can feel sympathetic and empathetic, but you just don't have that same kind of feeling the pain that the person's having. And we can't expect others to feel our pain. It's a different kind of pain than other people experience. Do you think that's accurate?
Well, I think it is unique for women who are married to gay men. But I also think that there are women who are married to straight men who are also emotionally distant, cold, abusive.
Absolutely.
And they're not there for them. And just to a certain extent, there can be some sisterly understanding and support there, even though they don't know exactly what it's like. But they know what it's like to be women who are not recognized and who are, oftentimes marginalized. They all can know that if they've experienced it.
And I think what you're bringing up is a good point, that even if you don't want to go to an abuse shelter, which, I can understand that, there are a lot of women's organizations that are doing workshops on, rebuilding your life, rebuilding self-esteem.
Right.
And you just have to go to the social service agencies. And, if you need any help in looking up groups like that, I'm happy to help you. But
and also, I might add that, let's face it, finances are a big, big, big part of this. And if a woman is contemplating divorce, she really needs to think about having her financial best interest at heart, because we need that. And there are, I'm thinking of a woman who's in my office building who has a program of smart divorce for women. And she's not a lawyer, but she's a financial planner. And she makes sure that the women are taking into consideration things that some lawyers might even not consider, so that they do the best they can with their financial planning.
I think that's very important. And, you know, I tell women, don't jump. You know, you really have to look around you and see what you have. Because in a lot of cases, even though men keep saying, oh, my wife's getting me for this and for that, I have not found that to be the case in the majority of cases of straight wives. I don't feel that, you know, they're getting any upper hand. Like a lot of the gay men organization, the gay fathers groups, they say, well, don't tell your wife that you're leaving because you're gay. Don't tell her you're gay because that'll count against you in court. First of all, it doesn't count against you because that's not even an option anymore.
Right.
You can't even get a divorce over the fact that somebody is, you know, gay. That's not grounds for divorce. So you can't even bring it up in a court trial, but this is a message that the Gay Fathers Organization spreads around to men so that men come to me and they say, well, do I really have to tell her I'm leaving because I'm gay? And I tell them, yes, you do. You can't be holding back that kind of truth for somebody who you claim that you love.
Well, I think, you know, quite apart from any of their legal concerns, it's ethically the right thing to do because she deserves to know why it's coming undone. Why
exactly.
Otherwise,
well, some of these men don't believe that. They say, well, you know, she has a lot of her own issues. And in their heads, that's what they're believing. And I say to them, the issue is she doesn't have a penis. That's your real issue. And then, you know, finally they say, you're right. But, you know, that's really the real truth there. I said, but it's not that she's done something wrong. It's just that you married somebody who was wrong for you because she's a woman.
Right.
So I said, you owe her that truth. Otherwise, I said, is that fair to do to anybody, make them feel that they're responsible for something they had no control over? You know, so I would say that missing puzzle piece is still missing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to the next part, which I think you're really good with explaining to women. When the next point was that when they say, well, I can't leave this marriage because we have children, and how can I destroy the children's lives? How can I be selfish? My children are always going to blame me. And, of course, you know, that happens in straight marriages, too. But, you know, I notice in these marriages it seems to be more of an obstacle for women. So can we talk about why that's not the case?
Restate the first part again, if you would.
Sure, about talking about why staying in the marriage because for the sake of the children.
Oh, yes,
that
right.
You can't destroy the children by leaving.
Right, so one of the points I make, and I just had this conversation with one of the men that's seeing me in therapy, is that, you know, he bless his heart, he comes to my office and gets really in touch with his emotions and then says, okay, I got to pull it together. I'm going to go home. It's going to be fine. It's been fine. It will be fine. What will you do? Well, I'll go home and we'll have dinner and we'll sit, you know, in the TV room and watch TV together. And if something comes on that's, you know, emotionally evocative for me, I just swallow hard and wipe the tears away before she can see them, and everything's fine, and we get along great, and everybody thinks we're the model couple.
Uh-huh.
And I said, yeah, and you're feeling like a stranger in your own life. And he said, yep, I am. And I said, and don't think that that's not creating an environment that your children are a part of. You're teaching them how to be estranged from themselves by being estranged from your own self and your own deep experience. And you're not being affectionate with your wife, you know. You're being kind because he's a nice guy. He's kind. He's thoughtful. He's a good provider. He, you know, shows up for his children's activities. And a good person. But they're going to pick up on the subtle depression that's there. And you're not doing them a favor. it would be better that they had a father and a mother who were fully alive and divorced than half dead and together.
And how does he respond to you?
And he sat there and he shook his head and he said, yeah, you are right, you are right. I've got to just find the courage to really deal with this. And I believe he will. In fact, I said, you know, you came to me because it's just become too much. And again, he shakes his head and said, yeah, that's right. So he's on his way. I find it takes these guys that come to see me sometimes 6 months before they're ready to really come forward with it.
I know, and I do want to say,
they go back and forth and back and forth.
I know that some of these men are so conflicted. You know, they're not bad men, they're just confused men. And I always tell our women that they don't marry you intentionally to hurt you in almost all cases. I mean, there are a few that just couldn't care less. But for the most part, men love their wives when they marry them.
They love them. They love them as best they know how to love them because that's the only alternative. I must marry a woman. Men are off limits. And that just summer camp, or that was just band camp, or that was just something strange, but I've dated women, and I've been engaged, and I'm married, and now I've had a child with a woman, so I must be straight. But there comes a point, and it usually happens at midlife, someplace between 40 and 50, when they can't suppress it anymore. Begins to come up, and then they start acting out on the side, and that's where the great shame sets in. But they go into it with good intentions.
And I don't believe they think they're gay.
No, they don't. I think they don't understand it.
They don't understand what gay is.
Yeah, they think that they are straight with a few odd thoughts and attractions around the edges. That's basically what is reported to me again and again.
I think that they believe that if they were gay, they wouldn't be able to fall in love with a woman. They wouldn't be able to have a sexual experience with her because gay men don't do that.
That's right.
And I think that's what's so confusing, which is why, you know, that Kinsey scale drives me insane.
I know,
it really gives men false hope for what they're not. By saying you can be a number 5 and you can be a number, move back to 3 and go up to 6, and sometimes you feel this way and another time you feel that way. But, you know, people would just say, this is what it means, and if you feel this way, this is what you are. You know, then people wouldn't have to be fighting it for so many years and trying to deny it. And I know a lot of it's because it's unacceptable and still in this earth. In many places, you know, that people have to be afraid of being gay or ashamed of being gay. And I hate when people say to me, well, so much has changed. Well, maybe in some areas it's changed, but not in middle America. You know, people have to still be fearful of being gay. You know, when they're in certain places, around certain people, it's still something that's ostracized, criticized, and bullied about. I mean, it's really still heartbreaking to see how people don't understand, you know, gay and how they reject it. So I understand if you had a choice and you could be straight because you think you could, not because you just want to be so much, but you find yourself falling in love with a woman. You see you can get sexually, you know, tuned into her. And even though that's usually when you're younger and you're late teens and 20s, by the time you're 30 and 40, that changes for the most part. But you don't know that at that age. You think this is going to work out. You know, she's going to love me so much, and I'm not going to want anything else, and I'm not going to think those thoughts, and I love her a lot.
Right. I completely agree. That's what goes through their heads. Yep.
So that's why I feel really bad, you know, for the men going through this struggle. I send them to you. I tell them, look, you know, I feel very bad for your struggle, but the worst thing that you can do is go through life living a lie on a daily basis.
Right.
I tell them, having to always look over your shoulder or wonder when it's going to fall on you. And I said, you know, you really can't do this to yourself on a day-by-day basis because internally they're really being tortured. And then they're depressed, and then their wives don't know why they're depressed. the wives internalize, well, I must not be being a good wife. You know, and it's just one big mess. And the ones who suffer, of course, the most, I always say, are the children. I mean, the wives had no say in this, but they still, you know, like I say, the children had even less of a say. And adults can fend for themselves a little better where children can't.
They can't. That's right.
And when they come from a marriage that lacks the kind of love, passion, you know, the things they see on television, what a family is supposed to look like, but their family doesn't look like that, it's very confusing to them.
And if when children have parents that divorce, if the parents will have a common face to the children and really mean it, in other words, we're both going to be here for you, we both love you, we're keeping your little world intact even though we're not going to be living together in the same house, and that's going to be different, and we understand that, but we're not, neither one of us are leaving you. And we're going to work together, and we're going to do a lot of family things together. The kids will be much better off than in either a bickering, bitter, or just emotionally vacant place where everything's cold and perfunctory. And the parents then actually have a chance to be friends with each other.
Do you think that
the kids are better off?
Do you think that there are any feelings that change when a man comes out and moves on? Are there any feelings that change towards his children at all?
I think it depends on the man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there are some who get, you know, they didn't go through their adolescence really when they
mm-hmm.
should have the sexual adolescence. So they tear into that with abandon and they become kind of adolescent themselves. Others have learned that they need to remain adults even as they're working through how do you, you know, navigate this whole new life that you're going to have. But the children still have to come first, and they recognize that. And frankly, I see the men working hard that I work with to be good fathers in the midst of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
I don't see them, the ones I'm working with, I don't see them flaking out. I can think of one in particular from a year or so ago who really was very self-absorbed, and you know, we did have to have a conversation about relationship with the children. So, you know, it differs from person to person.
Yeah, I find that, you know, when men first come out, they finally have the opportunity, they think in their heads, to lead a life that they've been missing for the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And some of them are like children in a, you know, candy factory, as the saying goes.
Yeah.
And this is their new life, and this is how they want to live it. And they need time to get acclimated, and, you know, they spent all their years being there as a father and a husband. Now it's their turn.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there are some who indeed do this. I would encourage them not to, but they do. Jung said years ago, whatever stage we skip, we will go back through it one way
uh-huh.
or the other. We will go through it. And he was right.
I know. It just makes it a hardship for a lot of the mothers. I mean, I was a single mom. My kids were babies. And, you know, it was just so hard on me raising children by myself.
Yeah.
And it is a scary thought when you have babies and you're tired and you have to do it all by yourself.
I can only imagine. I can't identify with it. I can only imagine.
Yeah, and some of our women are really in that same boat that I was in. Like, they're not getting any help. They're not getting any support.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things I always tell women is learn from my mistake. You know, I never went for child support because I always felt bad for my ex-husband or I didn't want to have a confrontation with him. And, I mean, he did buy the kids really nice stuff at Christmas time and furniture, but on a week-to-week basis, I wasn't getting child support. And I thought, you know what, I'll just work another job, or I'll just, you know, work harder and longer, and I'll make extra money, and I'll just handle it myself. Because, you know, I guess either out of pride, fear, combination of both, don't feel like going to court and taking, you know, their dad to court, what will they think of what I'm doing? So I went through those years, and that's what I did. I just worked, you know, two or three jobs, you know, full-time and a couple part-time jobs to try to keep the family going, and it was always the biggest mistake I ever made. I always tell women, learn from my mistakes, because all that time I could have been spending with my children, I was too busy working and earning a livelihood for them. You know, that money was for them, for their support, not for me, but just so that they could have something that I wouldn't have, I could be there for them.
Right.
And of course, you know, I lost my children when they were in their, you know, early 20s, and I missed out on all their future years, but I think of all the extra time I could have had with them if I would have gone to, you know, taken my ex-husband to court and said, look, you have to pay child support. This is your responsibility. And that's what I tell the men who come to me. If you are emotionally and financially responsible to your family, and you're there for your, you know, wife who will become an ex-wife, and you help take care of the kids, and you're helping with the, you know, finances that they're going to be losing out on now because you're leaving, and you give her time to, you know, go to school so she can go out and work and earn a decent income when she hasn't been doing this for 10 years because she's raising the kids. You know, if you can do the responsible thing, you have a really good chance of having a really good ex-marriage. You know,
exactly.
Where your kids can, right?
Right. Exactly. And, you know, the guys have been dealing with this longer than the women, and so when they tell them and they begin to go through the divorce, I want to encourage them, if there's any men listening, be as patient as you possibly have with every fiber of your being. Understand that she may vacillate with her emotions from understanding to being really angry with you. Stay calm. Be direct. Maybe in some areas you may have to have your lawyer talk to her lawyer. Try to work for a collaborative divorce rather than an adversarial one, you know, and collaborative divorce is an important term, and I think it's good to get lawyers on both sides that believe in that and are certified to do that, so that you can foster the good relationship as you go forward, because it's not just the settlement, it's making sure that the kids' lives are settled from here moving forward, and that doesn't happen in a courtroom.
Right, and I think that's the most important message for couples that have to split. You can have successful after-marriages if both parties are working for it. You know, if it's just you, it's not going to happen. And if it's not you, it's not going to happen.
Right.
But, you know, it's something that you can certainly aim for if you're married to one of these guys who are nice guys who just were misled through their life and now they're trying to do the right thing and make up for it. You know, if they're willing to be there for you, be there for the children, financially support you, emotionally support you, you know, that's the best scene. And I do know that we have couples in our group where this does happen. I'm not going to say it's a lot, but,
right.
You know, if it could happen for a few, maybe it could happen for a few more.
Right.
You know, once you get past a lot of the hurt and the anger, you know, maybe that should be your goal.
Right. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Bonnie. Absolutely right.
And I think co-parenting is so important because children need the love of two parents. You know, I always tell my women, if you want to curse and you want to vent and you want to say terrible things about him, you call me or come to our group, you know, and we'll talk about it. But in front of your children, you have to make him a hero, you know, because these children come from that father, right?
Right. In the old days, I'm not sure about today's Navy, but in the old days, they used to have what they called the smoking lamp. And when the smoking lamp was lit, it was okay to smoke on deck. And when it was extinguished, that was a sign that, no, you weren't allowed to smoke. And so I've often said to people, they'll call up and I'll say, okay, the venting lamp is now lit, so vent away. And then we'll extinguish it at the end of the conversation. And you know, you'll carry on.
Yeah, I
and
think it's
no
so destructive
if,
for
if
the...
No matter if it's a straight couple or a straight gay
mm-hmm.
couple, what I remind folks is the divorce doesn't mean the end of the relationship with the person. If you've got children, you're going to be in a relationship with them. You just need to decide ahead of time if you want it to be the best possible relationship or the worst possible relationship, because you're going to be in a relationship.
One way or the other.
Yeah, one way or the other.
Well, I tell my women also, you have to learn how to bite your tongue when you're with your children. And that
right.
used to be so difficult for me that my tongue was like halfway out of my mouth all the time from biting it. But I always wanted them to feel good about themselves. And, you know, if they think that there's something wrong with their father, then they internalize, I'm half my father, that half is wrong with me.
You know,
right?
While we're on, exactly. If there's something wrong with Dad, there must be something wrong with me.
Right.
And that's not the case, but moms can inadvertently telegraph that to the kids. As long as we're on the topic of kids and all of that, I'm just going to give a plug for a friend of mine, Dr. Yvonne Flesberg, her book called The Switching Hour. The Switching Hour. And it's about, you know, dealing with the children going back and forth from one parent to the other and how you go about the dynamics of how you go about doing that as parents in a way that's not damaging to the children. This is the very thing you're talking about, the switching
uh-huh.
hour. And I think they can get it through Amazon.
Maybe she would come on
the
show one night, Brian, since she's your friend.
Oh, she'd love to. I'd be happy to invite her on. She'd be great.
Yeah, that would be great, and you can let me know some of her background. I'll get her book. And
maybe
that would be helpful for some of our women to see, you know, what are the best methods to do this without, you know, compromising yourself, but without destroying your children.
Right, exactly. Yeah, she's a good person, professor at Vanderbilt University and also a licensed pastoral therapist, and she is not anti-gay at all. I mean, clearly, because she's a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And but she'd also not be one that would counsel people to stay in mixed marriages. So, yeah, I'll give you all her information. We can plan on that.
Don't forget, Brian, not mixed marriage, mismarriage.
Mismarriage. Yeah, that's right.
Mistake of
okay.
a marriage.
There you go.
I don't want them to sound like so politically correct, a mixed marriage. I think it's a mismarriage, but it's a mistake for both parties. And, you know, people just deserve to have a good quality of life. And if you do things the right way, you make a mistake, the best thing about life is you can fix a mistake.
That's right.
And if you made that mistake of getting into a marriage that you didn't belong in, the best way to fix it is to figure out how to get out of it, right?
Right, exactly. Yep. I completely agree.
So, Brian, we really look forward to you being back with us, and it won't be very long. It's already the 1st of March, and you'll be back with us at the end of March again, right?
That's right, absolutely.
The last Monday in March. And maybe you can talk to your friend and see if she'd like to join us.
Okay. I will do
that. Not in March, maybe in April. You know, whatever month is good for her, that would be great.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. So thank you for being my guest on my first Monday night show.
Woohoo. I think we got it off to a good start.
I think so, too. And if you have any ideas or you have any questions that you would like Brian to, talk about on our next show, just let me know. And also, you can go to his website. And if you want to jot them a note, you can certainly do that. And let's give them the website.
It's www.drbrianhooper.com.
Is there a doctor there?
That's right, drbrianhooper.com.
Oh. I'm sorry I missed that DR. Okay, so drbrianhooper.com. Or just write to me at Bond K and I'll send you the link. So,
there
Brian,
we go.
Thank you so much. I'm going to end our show tonight by going out with a song. And it's from the Beatles, the song Blackbird. Do you know that song?
I know the song. I grew up listening to it.
I know. It's such a great message for our women, you know,
yeah.
that you have to take your wings and fly away, you know, when something's not right for you. And I do want to say this is not a gay issue. This is a issue for women, no matter who you're with, that you can never let a man mistreat you and make you feel like you're losing your dignity. And if, and believe me, it happens to half the women in the whole world. You know, so it's not a gay thing. It's just a dignity thing. That there are a lot of people out there who can mistreat you, and you have to not let that happen. You have to stand up and walk the other way. So, Brian, I love you. And
I love
I'll be talking
you.
To you in a few
you.
Weeks.
All right.
Yeah, and we love all of you ladies listening and guys. And we'll be back again next week. Good night.
Night, Bonnie. Bye-bye.
Good night, Brian.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the line of a dark black night. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the light of a dark black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to arise. You are only waiting for this moment to arise. You are only waiting for this moment to arise.
With that, I'll say goodnight to all of our ladies, and I hope you have a wonderful week. Write to me at bonk@aol.com if you need any further help or support. And thanks so much for listening to our Straight Wives Talk Show. Good night and love to all of you. Bye-bye.